the Buddha, Shri Dharma, Shri Sangha. So, I want to go back to the plate three that I talked about yesterday. And I want to just read one line, one sentence from it. And I want to just kind of tag that sentence to watch today and tomorrow where it goes to. It's a wonderful example of how the Eternal uses everything and how even the deepest delusion is just that really when it's broken down into its components, which eventually does one day, it's just saddened love. It's just confusion and pain around particular that have formed a kind of a protective barrier around a particular knot of saddened love. And therefore, it shouldn't be too surprising, but you do see it here in a wonderful way, that those voices of doubt and of despair, you'll actually get used and actually they get positive use, and they actually undergo this wonderful conversion. And this is the very heart of what is being taught here, what is being expressed here in this magnificent writing. It's the fact of conversion. It's why we don't try to kill the self. We just try to give the self the circumstances, the conditions, and the opportunity to undergo the natural conversion that it's longing for, the transformation. This is why it's called How to Grow a Lotus Blossom. The lotus blossom, you know, its roots are in the mud. You can't pull the roots out of the mud. What's the mud? Self, greed, hate, and delusion, karmic misery, confusion. That's the mud. You're never going to have a blossom that opens beautifully to the light of the eternal, to the sun of the eternal, if you try to yank it out of the mud. So right here, In this one line here that I'm going to read, I don't think I have yet, have I? This one sentence, you have a little piece of the mud showing itself. Don't despise that mud in yourself or in another. As the Rim Master said in 1987, in your hearts and in your minds always hold generosity of spirit. Always hold generosity of spirit in your minds and in your hearts. And the reason why this is not just a kind of exercise in heroic virtue, which is pointless, by the way, that kind of thing, but it's actually an expression of truth, is through that generosity of spirit, the willingness to try to see Buddha in everything and in everyone, even in the darkest, most pained delusion. It's in that effort that willingness that there lies the seeds of enlightenment. Never try to yank the roots of the lotus out of the mud in order to achieve enlightenment. And of course, that's what the ascetics do, and it's incredibly destructive. Instead, we have to, again, say no to delusion respectfully and yes to the eternal. And that sets the limit where delusion can begin to undergo its conversion. Without that limit, it can't do it. This is why the precepts all are expressions of limits. Don't go down this road. Don't go down this road. Don't go down this road. It says do not indulge anger, for example. It doesn't say kill anger. Big difference. You try try to kill it, and the underlying grief just goes ballistic. With desperation makes it much worse. But if you simply say, no, I'm not going down the road of indulgence of anger, then you give the anger, instead you go the direction of compassion, then you give the anger a chance to undergo its conversion. It's the right use of the will. Anyway, the sentence I was going to read is where she says, and yet what have I got? And yet what have I got? Says, one can see the summit on either road, and you can see that they go off into from the summit, one can see the roads down below, the roads of worldliness, and they go off into despair. And then she says, and yet what have I got? I'm out here alone, on the, you know, bleeding and cut, and, you know, what have I got? That's the, what's in it for me, you know? What's in it for me? Anyway, I'm on plate four now. It's called The Road Appears. The mountaintop seems to be flattening out and descending to the level of the roads. They can still be seen on either side through gaps in the rock, perilous gaps, narrow and spiny, small holes. But anyone who is on the roads can make it through if he or she so wishes. There is always a way onto this mountain range. The stones become smaller and smaller. I am still on hands and knees. The bleeding and cutting continue. I must take no notice of what is on either side. I must remember that one can go out through those holes just as much as one can come in and take. I must remember that one can go out through those holes just as much as one can come in. And I must take no notice whatsoever. There's always the possibility of going back to worldly attitudes and values. It's always that possibility. As Rim Master always said, right up till she died, she always said, your past karma can always act upon you, at least potentially. So, you know, we need to be vigilant. She says, absolute blackness beyond me and straight ahead. The bright lights on either side become dimmer and dimmer. There's less attraction. As you go deeper into meditation, there's less attraction. The pull of the world becomes more remote. The pull of despair, you could say, of the active and passive aspects of despair, desperate striving and desperate giving up. The pull of both of those becomes less as you go on. I must take no notice of them, not see their beckoning, not pay attention to the beckoning. Just go on, go on, go on. So, what does it mean that the road appears here? Well, the way I was describing the earlier plates, the initial plates, is really of the raw feeling, which is the reaper of karma, really intense spiritual pain, really hitting wham, the intense grief, the intense despair, the intense self-doubt, intense fear, the terror. She said at the beginning, I am in terror. And that's always the case of someone going into one of these biggies, by the way. It's just sheer terror. I'll never forget the day before I had what I think of as the Great Surrender in 1998. I was actually out of temple most of that day. But wherever I was, what I was doing, I won't go into what I was doing, but I was just really being still, really drawn inside myself, because I was just having this terror come up out of my bowels, you know, this terror. I spent the whole day in this terror, and I was just meditating. What can you do? I was just meditating, going in an external appearance. I would just seem like someone who was maybe just a little introspectively drawn, but I was meditating for dear life that day. And it's the next day, that night I was back in the temple, and it's the next morning that I popped. So, this pure unalloyed feeling, which is a reaper of karma, now the road appearing, the initial shock of that, all that feeling hitting, is now been absorbed. And now it's kind of like a, I hate to use this analogy, but it's apt, I'm afraid. It's like a boil bursting. You know, there's initial, ouch, you know, and then now it's draining, and the muck in it is draining out. And now there's some beginning of some relief from the intensity of the initial shock of pain. It's still, you know, plenty intense. And at this level, when this happens, a person gets almost no sleep for a long time. Just the absolute minimum that's needed. But round the clock, even in one sleep, the meditation is going at a very deep level. The road appearing is really just the meditation is starting, is really taking off. People think, I've said this for so many years, people think of themselves as, you know, I am meditating. That's the kind of way you learn to meditate. You make the effort of meditation. I used to tell the congregation, you know, well, in the beginning you meditate. Later on, the meditation does you. And of course, that's not any grammatical way to speak. It doesn't make any sense in a way. But when the meditation takes off, you know, you just, and you, all you do is you just give your willingness to it. This is why I talk about being drawn into deep meditation. Where Master Mokugan describes it very beautifully as being drawn out into the ocean, and it feels like that when you're drawn into deep meditation. You're drawn out into an infinite ocean of stillness. It may be very, very dark, and yet there it is a dark shot through with light. At that time, as I've often said, Dahara feels vast. Dahara, because Dahara is where in the body where you experience the meditation, the stillness of meditation most deeply. And it feels like vastly expansive. You can't make these things happen, by the way. Don't be silly and try to make anything happen along these lines. It happens naturally when all conditions ripen. And the more of the karma is converted, the more of the blocks that are worked through, the spiritual blocks are worked through, the deeper this goes. At the level that Master is speaking of here, it's very deep indeed. And one is drawn, you know, deeply within spiritually. And that road is a naturally appearing road of the meditation itself, as I understand it. This is the path to go. Give yourself willingly to this. Give everything willingly to this and allow yourself to be drawn. No matter how I speak of it, I always come back to, you'll notice this and I can't help it. It's always been my experience. I always come back to the role of the eternal. Remember, this is religion. This isn't self-help. This is religion. It's not psychology, it's religion. The road appearing is her experiencing of the compassion of the eternal, manifesting through her own experience, and not yet fully recognized. Later it will be fully recognized, but not yet. The next plates are 5 through 9, actually, and this is a much longer one. We won't get all the way through this today. It's called Entry to the Abyss. The blackness is complete. It is as if I am in a huge tunnel, everywhere darkness and blackness, still on hands and knees. Remember how often I've used the term, which I really learned from Master Mokugan, actually, the hands and knees, being on hands and knees. Well, this is a time when you are on hands and knees, spiritually. On hands and knees, spiritually. For me, this is much more than a metaphor. It's just, you're just, it's all you can do to crawl. You are crawling. Spiritually. And it's from that place of being on hands and knees that your heart is crying out to the Eternal for help. Like you've never known before how to, you know, it's not something you can drum up from your will. This just comes out of you. The need, the felt need is so great that it just comes out of you, the cry to the Eternal. If you remember the movie, which is a wonderful movie, about C.S. Lewis and the period of his life when his wife, he met his wife and then, you know, she died. It was, not a too long relationship, I gather, actually. But, what's the name of that movie again? Shadowlands, yeah. At one point, it's either while his wife is dying or right after she dies, one of his friends says something to him about prayer, and C.S. Lewis says something along the lines of I have to pray. It just comes out of me. This is the prayer, the level of prayer we're talking about here, the cry to the Eternal. It's coming right out of your body. It's not coming from your head. It's not coming from your will, in the normal sense of the will. It's just everything in you is crying out to the Eternal. Your very being is a cry for help to the Eternal. Your very being is a cry for help to the Eternal. This is where one really gets religion. No matter how much you've got religion before, this is where you get it deeper. No matter how much you've got it before, this is where you get it deeper. When your whole being is a cry for help to the Eternal. Still on hands and knees, I move on until in front of me there looms a great black lotus. It towers high above me, huge, incredible. Within me a voice whispers, "Be careful, be very careful. Remember, nothing matters." Upon the side of the lotus is written in dull yet glowing red, "Nothing matters." Ahead and to the left I perceive dimly a giant iron pillar that I know penetrates the universe. This great blackness is both the blackness of utter despair and the blackness of utter potentiality for enlightenment. It is the darkness of infinite potentiality, the darkness of total absorption into the All is One. It is not something negative, this darkness. This is the darkness of the Eternal being experienced at a time of greatest spiritual need. It has the aspect, when you first go into it, of the despair, because that in us which does not know the Eternal feels cut off from the Eternal. But it is precisely in that blackness that the reuniting, what's called so beautifully in one place in the teachings on reharmonization, the happy meeting between our karmic need and the Eternal, is it precisely in that utter darkness that it begins. The happy meeting. Not seeing. This is also the the darkness of the cloud of unknowing. But at the deepest level, the obscurity, obscure to what? Obscure to intellect. Obscure to, utterly obscure and black to intellect. Impenetrable to intellect. Impenetrable to curiosity. Impenetrable to hope or desire. Impenetrable to willfulness. Impenetrable to ego. And yet the greatest possible comfort to the heart. A comfort even in the midst of terror. This is where, you know, you just go deep into the heart, deep into the deepest meditation. Nothing matters. Hold fast to the Lord of the house. Nothing matters. The nothing matters is just the reverse side, the back side of the opposite side, I don't know how to put it exactly, the converse, or whatever, of hold fast the Lord of the house. Let go of everything and hold fast to the Lord of the house. Where is the Lord of the house to hold fast to? Just open your heart completely to that darkness and trust like you've never trusted before. What is the giant iron? Well, let's talk about the lotus for a second. Why do the words nothing matters appear in dull red, on glowing red, on a giant lotus? Well, the lotus represents enlightenment itself. So there is a message being sent to her. However terrified you may be, whatever the voices of despair and despondency and self-doubt may say, you're headed in the right direction. The lotus represents enlightenment, the unfolding of enlightenment. Right in the darkest place, and this is the darkest place here, right in the darkest place, there is the sign of the eternal imprinted on it. I am here. Do not be moved. Hold fast. I am here. What is the iron pillar to the left of the lotus? That is the iron pillar of the eternal that goes through heaven and earth and has neither top nor bottom. The infinite pillar that when you sit up straight in meditation, goes right through your spine into the ground and up through the top of your head. Of course, it's not literally, can't be literally limited to any one experience of it. But this is the same pillar that is the fifth column when we talk about columns. The Lord of the house. The Lord of the house is there. Enlightenment is there, right in the darkest place. Just trust. Trust as you have never trusted before. I'm going to stop here for today, friends.